भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Before beginning, thank you all very much for coming. I hope you last for the whole period. That's always nice. A few of you might go to sleep. That's okay, too, as long as you're here. You can hear it on the subconscious level. And I get benefit by having somebody to talk to and in my loneliness and speaking the wonderful teachings of Srila Prabhupada and the glorious words of Lord Sri Krishna Shukdev Goswami. So thank you so much. It's a wonderful opportunity to share this with all of you. So we'll begin with the... There are two verses which precede the one over there, which I would like to just chant those verses first, and so that we have some thread of the continuity where this particular chapter is going. It is Canto 7, Chapter 13, and we'll be doing texts 12 and 13 and 14. So first I'll do these, the first two myself, and then we can do the third one as we usually do. Tam shayanam daro pastehi kaveryam saha sanuni Rajas vales tanu deshar nigudam malatejasam dadarsha lokan vicharan lokatatva vivitsaya vritu matyai katipayai prahrado bhagavat priyam. Translation. There's no purport on this one. Prahlad Maharaj, the most dear servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, once went out touring the universe with some of his confidential associates just to study the nature of saintly persons. Narada Muni is narrating this, by the way, and Prahlad Maharaj is not the five-year-old boy that we knew him as in previous chapters, okay? He's a grown-up man. He's a king. Thus, he arrived at the bank of the Kaveri, where there was a mountain known as Sahya. There he found a great saintly person who was lying on the ground, covered with dirt and dust, but who was deeply spiritually advanced. So now we can begin the verse. Karmana akritibhi vacha lingai varna ashram. Adibhi na vidanti jana yam vai saha Aso iti na va iti cha. Karmana kriti birvacha lingarvana shramadibi Navidantya janayam vai so saviti naveti cha karmana kriti birvacha lingarvana shramadibi Navidanti janayam vai so saviti naveti cha Karmana Excuse me. Karmanakriti birvacha. Lingarvana shramadibi. Navadanti janayamvai. Sosav iti naveti cha. Please chant. Anyone else here on the male side? Ladies, please. Else? You don't get thrown out if you mispronounce. Okay. Karmana, by activities. Akriti bi, by bodily features. Vacha, by words. Lingai, by symptoms. Varna ashram, pertaining to the particular material and spiritual, well, that's a big long one, so let's take it in parts. Pertaining to the particular material and spiritual divisions of varna and ashram. Adibi, and by other symptoms, Navadanti could not understand Jana, people in general, Yam, whom, Vai, indeed, Saha, whether that person, a soul, was the same person. Iti, thus, na, not, va, or, iti, thus, cha, also. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Neither by that saintly person's activities, by his bodily features, by his words, nor by the symptoms of his varnashram status, could people understand whether he was the same person they had known. Please repeat. Neither by that saintly person's activities, by his bodily features, by his words, nor by the symptoms of his varnashram status, could people understand whether he was the same person they had known. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The inhabitants of that particular place on the bank of the Kaveri in the valley of the mountain known as Sahaya were unable to understand whether that saint was the same man they had known. It is therefore said, Vaishnavera kriya mudra vigya na bujhaya. A highly advanced Vaishnav lives in such a way that no one can understand what he is or what he was. Nor should attempts be made to understand the past of a Vaishnav. Without asking the saintly person about his previous life, Prahlad Maharaj immediately offered him respectful obeisances. Karmana kriti bir vacha, lingarvana shrama dibi, navedanti janayam vai, so sav iti na veti cha. Neither by that saintly person's activities, by his bodily features, by his words, nor by the symptoms of his van ashram status, could people understand whether he was the same person they had known. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmalitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. So we see, or Prahlad Maharaj sees as he's walking through the forest, he's a man lying on the ground. He's rather plump, well-fed, and he's just lying there. And he's doing nothing, seemingly. And he's compared to a python who sometimes you see who just lies on the on a tree and is just waiting and waiting and waiting for someone or something to get near his mouth so that he can just close it quickly and have a meal. And so he just lives in hope. And generally, if Krishna wants the python to go on living, he will send some little creature, maybe a rabbit or maybe some bird. And so he gets a chance to eat. Sometimes they even eat a huge animal. And they take months to digest them. So it's very interesting. The Lord is feeding this python. And now we see a man who's lying there. And Prahlad Maharaj sees it's just not some bum lying on the ground. You know, sometimes you go downtown or you might even be walking around doing a japa walk and you see somebody just sprawled out on the street reeking of alcohol and just completely crashed. And you don't think that this is an upstanding, highly advanced, spiritually together person. It's just generally not thought. But here we have something different. Prahlad Maharaj sees a person who's just, as I said, just lying on the ground that way. But Prahlad Maharaj is not an ordinary human being. He's a being who is transcendental. He has inner vision. He can look at a person because he's a God-realized soul. He's not anything like this person lying on the ground in one sense. He's a king. He has many duties to perform, countless people to address, numerous instructions to give. His day is filled completely with activity, and yet, in spite of his activities, he's able to remember Krishna. He never forgets his great friend Lord Nrsingadev. As Krishna says, engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances. Worship me. Thus completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. He says that in the 9th chapter and he says that in the 18th chapter. In the 18th chapter, he adds a few words at the end. He says, because you are my friend and my devotee, you will achieve God realization. Friend and devotee. We all have to try to be the friend of Krishna. Of course, Krishna is everyone's friend in one sense because we're all his children. And he loves, any father, mother will love their children. But he wants, and we all have a relationship with that father. But the father wants communicative relationship, not a dead relationship. It's like a person, he goes, leaves home, you know, to college, never writes home, never calls, never sends an email. So, you know, the parent would like to hear from the child. So similarly, because that's the relationship, the communication creates that relationship. And similarly, the Lord wants to hear from us. Wants to hear from us in our prayers. He wants to interact with us. He wants loving exchanges with us. He loves us. So the Lord loves everyone, but he doesn't express that love to everyone. As Krishna says, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects. I reward them according to the degree that they surrender unto me. So that reward comes in the form of an expression. The expression can become any number of symptoms. Devotee may feel peaceful, joyful, uplifted, strong, confident. He may develop certain virtues which he's been having trouble overcoming. Pride and anger and hostility, envy, sloth, gluttony. All of these are different problems that we all face. But Krishna is so kind when he wishes to bestow his mercy on his devotee because he's pleased that the devotee is trying to make some effort to serve him, to please him, to love him, to relieve him of also his little bit of suffering. His suffering is all his children are out there ignoring him, disregarding him, not caring about him. He wants them to write home. Home means himself. Even if a mother has 10 or 20 or 30 children, she still loves them all. And when one is missing, she becomes concerned and anxious. Because that is the nature of a mother's love, which is actually a reflection to some degree of Krishna's love. I came to know about Krishna's love through my mother's love for me. There was nothing she wouldn't do for me. She was always there for me. And I could never, while these things were happening, I took them all for granted, pretty much. But when she left this world, I then began to realize so many things that she had done for me, which she really didn't have to, and which sometimes indifferent and abusive moms, don't take their duties sometimes very seriously. So I came to understand that all this love that was coming to me, whether it was food or clothing or shelter or making my bed when I was 11 years old or buying me a radio, whatever it was, buying me a typewriter so that I could type and write stories and things, this was all Krishna's love. I didn't know that while that was happening. We tend to take so many things for granted. But that is how Krishna's his mercy manifests through mothers especially, and fathers too. Fathers love their children too, but mothers bond a little more tightly, it just happens to be, because they're always with the kids. So, coming back to this situation here, Prahlad Maharaj, because he's an enlightened soul, he's an advanced soul, he has love of God. In spite of his numerous duties, his numerous responsibilities, he's still thinking of Krishna. He's still thinking of his Lord Narsingadev. But you don't know that. He doesn't have to be shouting, Jai Narsingadev! He doesn't have to do that to let everybody know that he's a great devotee. It's going on within him. Of course, if he wants to encourage others to do that, he can do that. He can say, yes, Jai Narsingadev! And everybody joins in. But quite often, great saints, they like to also stay, they like to just do these things without being glorified, without being honored, without being applauded, without being shouted up to the sky how great they are. They just want to be, they don't think they're great. Although Prahlad Maharaj was, he was a king, And everyone was honoring him, celebrating him, applauding him, bowing down to him. He never thought he was great. You know why? Because he met the real great. He met Lord Nrsingadev. And once you meet Lord Nrsingadev, there's nothing greater than he. He's the greatest. He's the highest. He's the biggest. He saw Lord Nrsingadev destroy in front of his own eyes the most powerful man in the material world, namely Hiranyakashipu, who had gotten so many boons from Lord Brahma and who thought he was all in all. So he saw the greatest, the best, the highest. And how could he ever forget that? How could he ever stop savoring it? How could he ever stop relishing it? And therefore, it was a very wonderful impression that he had. Of course, it was a bit gory. It was a bit bloody, yes. Nonetheless, that is the fearsome side of the Lord's nature. When he comes to protect his devotee, he may get a little bloody. So Prahlad Maharaj knew it was done on his behalf to save him. Consequently, he could not stop loving Lord Nrsingadev. So as Krishna says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, whatever austerities you perform, do these as an offering unto me. In this way, you'll be freed from the bondage to work and its auspicious and inauspicious results. With your mind fixed on me in this principle of renunciation, giving up, giving up, giving up, to Krishna, to Krishna, to Krishna, with your mind fixed on me in this principle of renunciation, you will be liberated and you'll come to me. Not just you'll be free from the three modes of material nature, not just you'll be free from karma and reactions, you'll be free from this material world, and you'll attain the spiritual world, and you'll attain your original service to me, and you'll always be happy. It will not be happiness one minute, despair the next minute. A devotee is ever increasingly happy. Even when he's crying out of loving separation for the Lord, he wants Krishna. He's praying to see Krishna. He's praying to get to Krishna, and somehow he can't. Or he's looking at beautiful Krishna, and tears are flowing down his eyes, like Srimati Radharani. She would be crying, and she was cursing her tears because the tears were blocking the clear, perfect vision of Krishna. She says, "Hell with these tears! Get them out of here! I want to see Krishna pure, perfect." And then the gopis were there. They were cursing their eyelashes. "Brahma, what a stupid, foolish creator you are. You give me these eyelashes for a half a second. I don't see Krishna. What kind of a creator are you?" She's cursing them, cursing him. They want to see Krishna continuously. One flow, like when you pour oil, you know, into a vat, it has a continuous flow. So they want to see Krishna that way, but they don't just see him. Their eyes are absorbing him, engulfing him, embracing him, literally squeezing him in their hearts. And in that squeezing him of their hearts, they're feeling ecstasy, joy, fulfillment, satisfaction. And when Krishna's away, and they're remembering those wonderful pastimes, those close encounters, they're even more ecstatic in sorrow. Because he's away. And they want him to be here and now. But he's away. But they're seeing him in their mind. And as they see him in their mind, oodles of tears come flowing down their cheeks. Like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the mood of Srimati Radharani, the tears would squirt out like when you squeeze an atomizer. It would go out and they would get washed. Persons would get it on their face or on their shoulders, and it would just rub it, or it would drop on the floor. People would fight to get those tears and hold them and rub them into their hearts or over their faces. So precious, so wonderful, so fulfilling were they. And the more they rubbed the tears on their bodies, or the more they tasted the tears, the more blissful they became. It was ever increasing, never stopping, never like in material pleasure. You know, you eat the ice cream and then it's gone. And that's it. Nothing more. But an intelligent person takes... An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery, which are due to contact with the material senses. Such pleasures of the senses have a beginning and an end, and the wise person does not delight in them. What does he delight in? Permanent pleasure, unending pleasure, enduring pleasure, ongoing pleasure, pleasure that never stops, and that pleasure can only be what? Transcendental pleasure, divine pleasure, Krishna pleasure, the pleasure of remembering Krishna, the pleasure of reading about Krishna, the pleasure of visualizing his pastimes, the pleasure of reciting his holy name with love in your heart. Of course, if we recite the holy name, just recite it without any love in the heart, without any sense of appreciation, without any feeling of gratitude, without any sense of, I am speaking the name of the most powerful, perfect, glorious person in existence. If we don't have that attitude when we're chanting, well, you'll get some benefit. Because the holy name is absolute. And when you touch the absolute, you always get something. But you get more, as Krishna says, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So as we give more and more of our heart in our chanting of God's holy name, and we chant from the heart, not merely from the head, and Krishna feels that, he senses that, he knows that, and he reciprocates with that. And when he reciprocates with that, the devotee knows. He may perspire profusely. He may be stunned for a few moments, can't do anything. Or the hairs on the arms, they horripilate. They go up. Or one begins to tremble. When his lip quivers. Lord Chaitanya's teeth used to shake. People thought his teeth were going to fall out of his mouth. That was the nature of his ecstasy. Can you imagine to see somebody's teeth shaking? And color, the color of the face, it blanches, becomes white. And a person may he gets choked up at the Ratha Yatra festival. How did Lord Chaitanya express his when he wanted to say Lord Jagannath, how did he say it? Anybody remember? Yeah, exactly. He couldn't get it out. It was stuck in his throat. It was that, you know. I mean, I wasn't there. I mean, I'm just doing the best reproduction I could do. But that's the idea. I had been choked up, not for reasons of love of God, love of the wrong things, but I have been choked up, and you know that feeling. You just can't speak. And so the point is this, is Prahlad Maharaj is now here, and he sees that this is a great saint. This is a sage. This is someone who, although he appears to be, as we might say, just a bum on the road, so to speak, he has a life going on within him. And the interesting thing is, he doesn't approach him and say, I am your king. So, tell me, why are you on the road? What are you thinking? Tell me. He doesn't dictate. He doesn't order, although he's the king and he can. He speaks very respectfully. He knows this is a sage because his inner vision tells him this is not an ordinary person who's lying here. This is a person steeped in God consciousness. And so he says, my dear sage, I don't mean to be presumptuous, but may I ask you a few questions? That's the proper way. May I ask you a few questions? Not, I'm your king, you know. Now, it's very interesting how King Pariksit was under Yogamaya. I remember it comes at the beginning of the story when King Pariksit had come from a hunting. He had been out hunting and he was very thirsty. And he walked into, what was his name? Shamika Rishi's little hut. Shamika Rishi happens to be in Samadhi. But normally, King Pariksit would have known that because he also was a God-realized king. But he was under Yogamaya because certain things had to happen at that time. You know, Sringi had to curse him and so forth. I won't get into all that. But he says, I would like some water, he says to the... And Shamika Rishi doesn't say anything. He says, I would like some water, I am your king. No answer. He says, do you hear what I said? I protect you, I am your king. No answer. So he turns around and stomps out, boom, 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 boom. Walks down a few little steps. Then he sees this dead snake lying on the steps. He picks up the snake, walks back, boom, boom, boom. He still doesn't wake up. Shamik Ricky, he's inside. He's in samadhi. He's out of this world. So he takes the snake and puts it around his neck as if to say, there. And stomps back out, gets on his chariot and drives. And then, it happened to be that some little boys were watching this. And they saw. And they went and they told his son, Sringi. King, he put a snake around your father's neck. And then Sringi says, how dare them? These kshatriyas, who do they think they are? I'll show them. And that was the beginning, really, practically, of Kali Yuga, the misuse of power. And so he cursed King Pariksit. Anyway, when King Pariksit was traveling back, he was on his chariot and says, why did I do that? How stupid. I'd never done anything like that in my life. Because he was under Yoga Maya. He was not seeing the reality as he normally would. So therefore, we cannot fault him with that. Krishna had to achieve certain things, which is why we're here today. He achieved what enables us to be here. This is the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam got recited because Sringi, he cursed King Pariksit, and King Pariksit went down to the Ganges, and for 7 days and seven nights, he listened to the Bhagavatam recited orally from Shukdev Goswami. And then Suta Goswami, he recited it in that Naimasaranya. So this all happened for a good purpose. That's what pastimes are. Pastimes are activities of the Lord, which usually assist and help him in the fulfillment of his mission. Something he wants to accomplish. And that's why we call it Krishna's or Lord's pastimes. It's not like I'm doing something and it's a pastime. He's the divine. Or when Srila Prabhupada does it, he does it under Krishna's direction, so it's a pastime. A person who's a pure devotee does perform pastimes. And if a devotee is acting purely under Srila Prabhupada's instruction or under a pure devotee's instruction, he also might be doing a pastime. It's not impossible. So, getting back, so the sage, as we will see in a few pages, the sage, after Prahlad Maharaj asked him, you know, can you please tell me a little about, here I see you lying on the ground, you're so portly, you're so heavy, you're well fed, how is this happening? You don't do anything. So the sage, quite often, sages don't like to get involved in conversations with persons who may be just like sightseeing or tourists. They're not interested in that. They want to be left alone. Bharat Maharaj is a very good example. After he became Jagat Bharat, after the incarnation that he had as Vadir, then he was born into a Brahmin family, and he acted like a moron. His father was a Brahmin, and his father was trying so hard to make him into a Brahmin. He loved him. But Jagat Bharat, he didn't want to get entangled in family life now. He had already had it. He got involved with a deer, which he started thinking was like his son. And that was it. He died, became a deer. Now he's got a Brahmin birth, and he's going to take care of it. And how is he going to take care of it? Well, he doesn't want to deal with anybody. All he wants to do is chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Ram Hare Ram. Oh Lord, oh my love, oh my life, oh my all, please, please help me. Let me not forget you. And then he has his brothers. They think he's just a crazy. And he's acting deliberately like a crazy. He doesn't want to be treated with respect. He doesn't want to be treated with honor. He doesn't want to be glorified. He wants to be left alone. Now when you see a crazy, a moron, an idiot, you don't bother with him. He's too stupid to talk to. That's the way it is. What am I going to get out of him? There's nothing intelligent going to come out of that man. So they left him alone. And quite often, and he achieved his goal. Because he didn't have the interruption, the interference. Of course, there were some dacoits, thieves, and they wanted to perform a sacrifice to Kali. Because the chief of the thieves, he wanted a son. He wanted his wife to give birth to a son. So he figured he'd offer a semi-human first sacrifice to Kali, and she would drink the blood, and she would be satisfied, and then he would get a son. So they got somebody, and then the guy, he escaped. So then they looked elsewhere, and they saw Jadbarat. Well, he looked a bit like an animal. He was walking around like this, kind of. And he was guarding the animals that his brothers had given him to take care of. And he was eating anything. You know, he would eat rice that he would find on the ground, or any leftovers. He didn't care about them. He slept on the floor. When it was cold, he didn't put anything over him. When it was warm, he didn't. He never complained. He remained peaceful throughout, all the time. So that's one of the qualities of being eligible for liberation. One who is not disturbed in happiness and distress, and is equal in both, is eligible for liberation, Krishna says. So he wasn't going to bother about it. This was Krishna's arrangement, and he accepted it. So anyway, what happened happened is they took Bharat Maharaj, they got him ready, they tied him up and put him in water, they bathed him, and after they bathed him, they're going to offer him to Mother Kali, and they were singing the chants, Jai Kali Ma, Jai Kali Ma, so forth, and then they were just, the deity was there, and they were just about to behead him. And then what happened is that Kali, because she's Krishna's servant, and she immediately came to life. The statue or the deity came to life and jumped down. And she pulled the sword away from that chief priest, the chief priest who was going to behead Jadbarat, and cut his head off. Then she went around, and then also all of her disciples, the yoginis, they all hair was wild, they were not even wearing any clothes, and they were screaming and cackling, and they immediately got into the act. And as Kali was cutting off the heads of these demons who wanted to harm Jagbarat, because Kali knew, so their heads were being lopped off, boom, boom, like you cut off oranges from a tree, boop, or grapefruits. So they were on the ground, and the ladies, they were just throwing them back and forth and having one ball of a time. So Jadbarat, he didn't particularly care for that scene, so he just picked up and got out as fast as he could, and he met King Rahugan on the road. The important point of all this is that Krishna protects his devotees, and we're all, but the devotees who depend upon him. Krishna says, in all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, but you act through your false ego, I, if you walk through your false ego, you will be lost. You will be lost. So, this is what Jadbarat, he simply accepted what came to him. And so this man who was lying on the ground, he explained to Prahlad Maharaj, Jad, I don't worry about where food is going to come from. God brings it. And if he doesn't bring it, that's okay. And if I die, that's okay. He didn't care. All he wanted to do was be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And nobody bothered him because, as I said, he just looked like a nobody lying on the road. And that was the situation there. So all of us should not try to imitate and go out onto the park, you know, one of the parks down the block on Washington Boulevard, and you sleep out there and expect maybe that Krishna is going to feed you, and you don't do anything. When we become as advanced as that soul, it doesn't matter, you can drop down anywhere and Krishna will take care. But we have lots of activities, devotional service, loving service to perform. And through that means, Krishna more and more cherishes, treasures, loves everything that we give to him, and then rewards us with more and more of himself. And as he rewards us with more and more of himself, we become happier, more fulfilled, more satisfied, and more eager and more able to share that with more and more people, because the heart becomes heavy, so heavy with the desire to want to express, to want to give, to want to distribute. It's our nature to do that. Look at Krishna. He's distributing all over the universes, and he's never tired. Look at Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He traveled down to South India, and everyone he met, he was just hugging and chanting and embracing and telling, chant, Hare Krishna, chant. And everyone was feeling ecstatic, and they would tell it to somebody. Hare Krishna. It was one uproar of chanting. This is the love of God. This is God's love. We are all here because of his mercy, not because of something special we did. And if he withdraws that mercy, this temple won't be here. So we should be very, very thankful. Not once, not twice, not 50 times, not 100 times, but all the time. My Lord, thank you so much for giving me a temple and appearing in this temple. And what's more, I have committed so many offenses and sins and wrongs. Notwithstanding all that, you allow me into your home. I can't believe it. It's beyond my imagination. It shows the extent of your mercy is so inconceivably and unfathomably great. I owe you. I'm so indebted to you. Please enable me to at least try to fulfill the debt that I never can completely fulfill. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Hare Krishna. Any questions? Or yes, sir. Sachi Tanoi Prabhu. Is it working? For all of our friends in China and in... All right, get it out good and loud. I'll repeat the question if it's not too long. Yes. Right.
So what would you recommend for someone who is not spiritually advanced, who is innocent, who wants a spiritual life, and not to be cheated by someone who might, you know, like sometimes people who are followers and devotees?
Yeah, right. How to make sure you get a bona fide spiritual master? Is that your question? Yes. So he doesn't know. Well, he has to wait a little while. Don't jump into the ocean, because there might be some sharks in there. Generally, you stay on the boat and watch the water for a while and see if you see any of these fins going back and forth. And when the water is good, in other words, you listen to the person. Different persons, they express certain feelings, certain ideas, certain thoughts. They emphasize certain things in their talks. And also you can see by how he lives, how he works, how he speaks. All of these things are mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita and also in the Bhagavatam. For example, that question which you're asking is asked by Arjuna, I believe, in the Bhagavad Gita. What are the symptoms of a person who is completely steeped in transcendence? You know, how does he speak? What is his language? How does he walk? And how does he sit? And Krishna says, when a man gives up all varieties of sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction, and when his mind thus purified finds complete satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. So generally, as such a person, we see Srila Prabhupada never stop talking about Krishna. And when he talked about anyone else, it was in relation to Krishna. Like he was talking about all those philosophers. But he had no interest. He just wanted to show where they were wrong and how they were close. Some were closer to Krishna, some were farther away. The most important thing, and I'll summarize it in these 5 points, he realizes he's an eternal servant of Krishna. He loses interest in everything except Krishna. He's always thinking of Krishna. He's always trying to figure out new ways to spread Krishna's holy name. And he understands that his only business is to spread the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. Such a person should be recognized as an Uttama Adhikari. And the advanced Uttama Adhikari should be considered a bona fide spiritual master. Uttama Adhikari, Uttama means highest, and Adhikari means authority, authority of spiritual activity. Does that answer your question? You have a question? Oh, so you would, yeah. Okay. Anybody else with a... Yes, Prabhu. This will be the last question, so... Yes. Correct. Yes. Yeah. Why what? We're inclined to sense pleasure because we originally came into this world. The question is why are we devotees inclined towards sense pleasure? You mean even while he's a little more advanced of a devotee, there's still a desire for sense pleasure? Yes, originally we came into this world to enjoy. That's part of lordship. We came here to taste what it's like to be a controller, to be a lord, to be a dominator. And part of that is enjoying sense pleasure. So the habits are very deeply ingrained in us. And although we may get many new virtuous habits, still those old ones sometimes come up. And if we're sleepy or we're tired or we're lazy or we're sometimes we have some illness, there may be some weakness at that time. So sometimes a devotee may accidentally have some fall down due to the remembrance of that pleasure in the past, and he forgets to remember the pain that he had too. When you're more alert and you're associating with devotees who are highly advanced, you remember the pain, not only the pleasure. And the pain being remembered is how you discriminate. And when you discriminate, you then detach yourself from that which you know will cause you pain, and that ends it. So that's basically what the situation is. As long as you have a physical body, until you become completely, all day, all night, steeped in God consciousness, so like Srila Prabhupada was, that desire for pleasure can pop up. So we have to be on our guard, and we have to pray like anything. Please, Krishna, protect me. On my own, I can't do anything except get into trouble. But with you, I can only get into the eternal world. Please help me. Hare Krishna.
Thank you.